But this is about magazine on RTR.
Welcome to Mortich Mag for another Thursday morning here on 92.1 RTR FM. Jodie Hoffman and Tony Hanson in the studio with you this week, filling in for Jim and Nick. Tony, welcome. How are you?
Good, Jodie. Good. Great to see you, and it's good to be back at the family home of RTR FM.
It is, and enjoyed listening to the program recently with yourself and Jim. And gee, it's been a busy time, Tony. We're going to talk a lot about, I know Mortich has been profiling the genocide screening that is coming up very soon. We're going to keep talking about that today, such an important issue. Compensation for our stolen generations. I had a sneak peek of the screening last night.
Mm.
Wow. It's difficult to put into words when you see the heartfelt resilience of our mob who have just suffered so much under the former government policies of this country. You were very involved in that, Tony. So we're going to talk about that on the program today, talk about bringing them home's involvement, Yokai, of course, and all the other key players that brought this incredible screening together. We're also talking about wind farms. Now, I don't know much about wind farms. Do you, Tony?
I know very little, but I know that probably very beneficial to our communities and in terms of energy and moving forward into the new century of wind farms. So it'd be great to have that discussion with our guests today and learn a little bit more and, I guess, educate not just you and I, but educate our listeners as well.
And looking forward to letting our listeners know more about yourself, Tony, as well, and, you know, the role of bringing them home, such an important organisation. So, yeah, a little bit of everything coming up in the next hour. So great to have your company, listeners. And we'll kick it off with this song from Briggs and others. This is The Children Came Back.
That was Electric Fields, One Macaulay, that participated in Eurovision a number of years ago. And we also had Briggs and Co, Children Came Back, here on RTR FM. Jodie, what two amazing songs there.
Yeah, kicking off at Mortich Mag for this week. Tony Hanson and Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you, filling in for Jim and Nick. And we're going to find out all about offshore wind farms, some consultation that's going to be taking place in Bunbury in the beautiful southwest. And welcoming to the program Terry O'Shane, who's the Maritime Union of Australia National Indigenous Officer. Morning, Terry. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good, mate. Look, as we always do on this program, before we get into the nitty-gritty, where you're from, who's your mob?
Oh, I'm a Goobity Warra man from Yalanji mob from around Mossman up towards Cooktown way.
Pretty nice part of the country.
Yeah, good part of the country.
And you are the National Indigenous Officer with the Maritime Union. What brings you here to Western Australia?
We've come down to have a primary discussion with people here about what's going to happen with the with wind farming. We just, it's part of a planning process, and we'll come back in a couple of weeks and hopefully meet with the PBC or the Land Council down there and meet with the mob and go through some discussions and where they are with their thinking about what wind farming, offshore wind farming is all about and how they might want to approach it and things like that.
You've been travelling with Thomas Mayo, who's the National Assistant Secretary of the Maritime Union. I'm pretty new to the whole area of offshore wind farms. Can you paint a picture to us of what it does actually involve?
I think everyone's a bit new to offshore wind farming, but I think it's a government, well, not a think, it's a government commitment to eliminate the use of fossil fuels or fuels to the extent that we can, so and protect the ozone layer, so that we actually, the old story, that we care for country in a proper way, so give the give country a bit of a breathing space. So it's an alternative to the use of fossil fuels. It's stop the, well, not going to stop, but slow down coal mining, alternative to use of uranium possibly, and things like that. So that's what wind farming is all about, what we call renewable energy.
So Bunbury is on the map for consultation. Why Bunbury?
Offshore from Bunbury, the surveys they've done, environmental surveys, indicate that they have a good wind volume there. It's constant. It's possibly all year round. The wind comes off the Great Southern Ocean, of course, so there's always a wind blowing through there. It's at the right pace and at the right volume, so apparently there's a good opportunity for a wind farming process to take place off Bunbury.
So, Terry, you're with the Maritime Union of Australia. Before we keep talking about the wind farms, tell us about the role of that union and what you actually get involved with.
Well, the Maritime Union, as it suggests, the name suggests, we involve ourselves in all things maritime, so anything that's got to do with the water, any craft that's moving on the water, ships that are sailing, any sort of vessels on the coast, offshore, deep sea, whatever it might be, the Maritime Union claims that sort of work. So with anything and everything that's to do with the maritime and wind farming offshore, I just get this flight announcement out of the way. Yeah, so anything that's got to do with the sea and got to do with vessels and work-related stuff is claimed by the Maritime Union.
And I guess, you know, as First Nations peoples, both land and sea is very significant to us. The fact that Bunbury has been, you know, spotted as a potential area for offshore wind, the consultation process, how will that actually unfold?
Well, that's one of our concerns. Just before we go to that, if you don't mind, just a couple of weeks ago, the Maritime Union had their quadrennial conference down in Adelaide, and at the quadrennial conference, which is the policy-making conference for the Maritime Union for the next 4 years, they adopted what we call a policy around social compacts. So the Maritime Union will be looking to develop social compacts with First Nations mob around the country so that we have more engagement with First Nation people into the maritime industry, looking for opportunities of employment and training and a whole lot of things coming as a result of that. But also, we work in collaboration with them about things like this now, about Bunbury, so that before we get into it, we go and have those discussions with those First Nation mob. In my case, it's with our countrymen, and Thomas Mayer, we're all same countrymen, so we're going to have a yarn to them and let them know what we're doing and see if we can't develop a relationship that works for both parties. But Bunbury's not the only place that's been targeted, of course, the Gippsland, Victoria and Tasmania and other places around the country have been identified and targeted as opportune places for wind farming, offshore wind farming. So it's going to be sort of going ahead, and we just need to get in on the ground floor to ensure that what First Nation peoples are looking, well, require in terms of being able to consider offshore wind farming on their country, that we can help address those issues with them.
Thanks, Terry, for that. I know very little either, but it's important for us, and I guess it's important for the engagement and collaboration between all parties. Does this impact our fishing and the general fishing? And can you tell me more about that?
Well, what we understand is that it won't, but that'll be part of that discussion. I think that when we go down to to Bunbury and have a talk to the mob, and they ask those sort of questions. If we don't have the answer, then we need to actually find that out. But early studies indicate that it's not going to won't affect anyone's fishing. It's going to be offshore. I think it's about 30 or 40 kilometres offshore. So, unless you're going out in a big speedboat to get out there to go fishing on some remote area, a little bit, you know. But other than that, it won't affect your fishing. I mean, I don't know how it would affect, in what way it would affect fishing. It's not going to pollute the waters or anything like that. So.
No, I'll be fishing from standing on the shore. I don't get out on the boats, but look, I think it's a great initiative. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for really strong, collaborative, inclusive discussions with all parties, and I think the mob will be really embracing this opportunity that when yourself and Thomas come to town and engage with the local TOs of the region.
Our guest is Terry O'Shane on Moorditch Mag, Terry being the Maritime Union of Australia National Indigenous Officer, and forthcoming consultation down in Bunbury about offshore wind farms. And that consultation process, very, very important, obviously, in speaking and working collaboratively with local mob. How does it actually work? Offshore wind farms, can you paint a picture in our head of how it actually operates?
Before I do that, I think that the Maritime Union are chasing up the collaborative process with the mob down there in Bunbury. I think one of the concerns that I have going into the discussion, but around this whole thing is that the governments have put out expressions of interest for licences. Now, I think before they've done that, they should have actually engaged with our mob. So one of the discussion points down there will be how do we get the government to just wind back a bit, and in future when they're going to be calling for expressions of interest on wind farming, on countrymen's country, then they actually have that collaboration with them about that in the first instance, so that if there's some money involved, then they can get a little bit of cash to get their technical advice, legal advice, or whatever other advice they need, they can get it paid for through some sharing in the money that comes in as part of that part of those license costs. Mm. So that needs to happen for a start. Wind farming is, you see it. I mean, we've got a lot of wind farming up home, but we're on shore where they got big turbines and they just drive over and whenever the wind's going, they regulate it through a remote control. They just kick over quite slowly. They drive a turbine. They run down. It'll be planted in the seabed, not dissimilar to a pylon or something that goes up when you go out in the harbour, things like that. So it'll go into the seabed, be anchored there pretty stably. It'll drive a turbine, which will then drive power into a base in Bunbury somewhere. They'll have a transfer station, and it'll supply power to the rest of the state of West Australia, I guess. Good, clean power.
Okay, so you've already mentioned some of the benefits of it. Give us a bit of a plug in terms of why we would want wind farms in Bunbury.
I think the alternative is a thing that we can't consider. I think that I don't think we can. Any one of us can consider we should continue to burn coal at the rate we've been burning it. I think that the increasing hole in the ozone layer is something that we can't consider. We as Aboriginal people have a standard position about caring for country. If the hole in the ozone layer continues to expand or even stays as it is, then our caring for country, we've got problems with that, I think. It also has an effect on the oceans. I mean, I'm from Queensland, so the Great Barrier Reef, under the intense heat, is starting to kill off the shallow reefs, and we're getting all that, all the bleaching of the reefs, and we're sort of losing habitat for fish and everything like that. So the use of fossil fuels is very dangerous in terms of the ecology, the ecosystems in Australia. So the if you want to look at an alternative, which we should have a look at alternative, then wind farming is, I think, very important. Solar is going to be important, and so is tidal power, you know, water power. So we have to find good alternatives to what we've got, because what we've got is not it's not something that we can actually consider as a future power resource.
All right. Look, Terry, we appreciate your time on the program today. When are you and Thomas Mayo heading back here to the West?
We'll be talking to the PBC down there early next week. Thomas made contact with them yesterday after talking to a few of the gentlemen here in Fremantle yesterday.
The PBC being?
I forget the name of the PBC. I was asking Farley Gullett what the PBC
was. Oh, okay.
I'm flat out naming it.
Yeah, I bet you are. Well, we're a long way from your home, so you're excused, all right? look, Terry, good luck with it and good luck with the consultation. And very interesting to learn more about it today on the Mortgage Mag program. And we thank you for your time. And maybe we'll have another yarn down the track when you're back here in WA.
I think it'll be lovely. Thanks very much for the opportunity, mate.
Thanks, Terry O'Shane from the Maritime Union of Australia, National Indigenous Officer. And look forward to hearing more from him and Thomas as they head over to the West. That was Patrick Davies, Sacred Ground. What a beautiful song, Jody.
It was a beautiful song, and you said, oh, Jim will be happy this song's on. Why is that?
Oh, Jim was he's picking his head last week to try and work out what was the name of this singer in trying to get the words together. And by the time we left the show last week, Jim said, now I know who sings this.
Ah, always the way.
Yeah.
Oh, that worm in your ear that you just can't picture who it is. Hey, this is the Mortgage Mag program, 92.1 RTR FM. Tony Hanson and Jody Hoffman in the studio with you this hour. Yesterday afternoon, I had a link to a special preview of genocide in the Wildflower State, which Perth audiences will be able to see in the coming weeks. Wow. There are no words to describe what can only be called genocide in this country against First Nations peoples. We're going to talk about that, Tony, but before we do, you are the co-convener with Alan Carter of Bringing Them Home in Western Australia. What is the role of Bringing Them Home?
Bringing Them Home is advocating for stolen gen survivors and descendants. It came about from the Bringing Them Home report that was tabled, I think it was about 27 years ago now, the Bringing Them Home report. So Alan and I are working closely together in this space. I guess Alan is the non-convener and myself is the Aboriginal convener. And I guess for me it's, advocating and looking at those recommendations from the Bringing Them Home report and ensuring and trying to keep them tabled in discussions both with government and stakeholders that we work closely with. So enhancing those recommendations and continue to fight the fight for our most disadvantaged people in our community, which is our stolen generation people of our nation.
And, you know, Tony, it's such an emotional area. So many of our people have been either directly affected as being part of the stolen generations, or it does, you know, transfer down the generations in terms of the impacts of, you know, parents or grandparents who were stolen. The resilience and the strength of people in genocide in the Wildflower State is just extraordinary.
It is, Jodie. And when you look at the Bringing Them Home report, it's a tribute to the strength and the struggles of many thousands of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that were affected by forced removal, enduring hardship, sacrifices that were made. Many of our people in our state of Western Australia continue to carry that burden today. We know that today we have 57% of Aboriginal people in our community that is connected to the stolen generation. We know that the former chief protector at the time, A.O. Neville, recommended that we have 100 institutions more than any other state or territory. Now, why, you know, you'd ask yourself the question, why would you want 100 more institutions than any other state or territory? What was the sole purpose of that?
Was to breed us out.
Exactly, exactly. And so, and stating that we were a dying race. We will not, we won't be around for long.
It's horrific when you think about, you know, and Neville the Devil, we're talking about, A.O. Neville. And, yeah, look, you know, there was the bigger missions like Magumba, Mauritian, Rowlands, Carrollup. But there were literally hundreds of places where our people were stolen from family, placed in missions all over the state. It was absolutely horrific, and there is no other word than genocide. Tell us about your role with the filming of this.
I guess part of my role is, you know, building the relationships with our survivors. I mean, I'm a survivor, probably one of the youngest survivors in the country. Youngest in the terms of I do have a voice. We know that there's many out there that sadly don't have a voice. And you know, because they're dealing with their the struggles and the challenges that they face day to day, and you know, their ongoing traumas that affected their health and well-being. And I guess for us, we had a 3-day gathering in Albany. We spent some time with survivors from Marybank, Carrollup, Nangrup Mission, and we just talked about some of the issues that were impacting and affecting, you know, our lives as stolen gen people, and what we would like to see, you know, looking at finding other solutions to better outcomes for our people. And part of that journey was talking about compensation, because WA and Queensland are the only two states that haven't compensated their stolen generation people. And many of our survivors, elders that have gone before us already, have said that, you know, they're waiting for us to die. And sadly, since the last 2 years, we've had about 130 to 140 survivors pass away. So they'll never understand, they'll never be a part of any reparation if this state determines that. So we started talking about our stories, how this has impacted us. And from that, we realised after we never purposely decided to do a documentary, but then we saw the recordings and we got the permission off our survivors to say, can we do a documentary? We actually feel that we can make a brilliant documentary out of what we've all done over the last 3 days here in Albany. And from there, we've just started to build it together. So we had Frank Rabovich that worked closely with us to ensure that putting all this stuff together, and Frank's done a lot of these documentaries in the past. So for us, I guess, as Jimbo would say, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, and this is building the trust and the faith of our survivors. And, you know, the work that Jim and I do in this space, and Alan and the team, is, you know, families and community trust us.
Mm.
They trust us. And when you've got a stolen gen person talking to a stolen gen person, we're all on the same page.
I'm chatting with Tony Hanson, my co-host on Mooditj Mag today, but we're talking about a very important documentary called Genocide in the Wildflower State. Tony, you mentioned that, you know, you're one of the stolen generations, but, you know, in a way you're fortunate that you're one of the younger members, so you have a voice. It's very sad that talking about our stolen gen is very commonplace for us. It's not out of turn, you know, it's known by all of us, the impacts of it, the ongoing legacy of it. But I imagine that when the wider community view this documentary as soon as next week, they're going to be very shocked when they see what's ahead of them.
Yeah, I think, Joe, you know, when we had the official launch on the 28th of April this year, which will be open for the wider community, I think the wider community will be shocked. I believe that, and I've always said this, that all West Australians and all Australians should know the truth. And this is a part of that truth-telling journey. It's truth and reconciliation. It's, you know, we don't learn this in school. I never learned this in school. I learned that Captain Cook came to Australia and settled peacefully. Now we know that as I got older, I learned more that, no, he didn't. And we have Aboriginal studies in universities and schools, and I guess that's enhancing the knowledge and learnings for school participation and engagement. And I think it's a great opportunity for our wider community to get a greater understanding of what this impact of former governments, successive governments in our state, in our country, and how they've impacted our people. And, you know, sadly, we had a history of removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children right across the country. You know, you think about it and you stop and you go, estimated 100,000. Now, many people in our country watch our national game, which is the Australian rules football. On grand final day at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, that holds 100,000 people. Just think about it for a minute. And I mean, I was taken in 1970 and released in 1985. And people tell us, get over it. It happened many, many years ago. This is our recent history. 1985. It's not that long ago.
And when people see this documentary and find out how brutal it was, they would not be able to get over it, I'm sure.
Hmm.
We're talking about genocide in the Wildflower State. Let's pause, Tony, and we're going to have a listen to an old song called Brown Skin Baby by Bob Randall.
That was Brown Skin Baby by
Bob Randall.
Bob Randall.
It's been around for a lot of years. I remember in the old WAMA days, the old WA Aboriginal Media Association days in the late 80s and early 90s. That was one of the high rotation songs on one of the old carts back then. That song has been covered a lot over the years. I guess it's such a poignant song and such an important song talking about our stolen generations. And that's what we're talking about today on Mooditj Mag, listeners. Tony Hanson and myself, Jodie Hoffman, in the studio. Genocide in the Wildflower State. There is a screening for Mob happening at the State Library next week. We'll tell you more about that before the end of this program. But then the big mainstream, wider kind of launch of it will be at Luna Cinema on the 28th of April. And I know our mates here at RTRFM are organising some private screenings as well. Very supportive of the Mooditj Mag show, and we love having the opportunity to do this show on this station. Tony, want to talk more about genocide in the Wildflower State. I think one thing that resonates when we speak with Stolen Generation Mob is that you were stolen, placed somewhere that was foreign, but the people that were in the same situation as you became your family.
Yeah, and I guess when you look at the Mission children, as we call each other, Mission brothers and sisters, we're a profound group of children. Profound because we've all gone through the same experience, experiencing all different types of trauma throughout our life, isolated, segregated, and out of sight, out of mind on many occasions. And I grew up at the place called, formerly known as Carrollup Native Mission, near Katanning, which is 22 k's out of the town site. And I grew up under the Marybank Baptist Mission era. Again, you know, we're 22 k's out of town, 11 by bitumen, 11 by gravel. A long way, we're out of sight, out of mind. I mean, today people that look after children today have to be screen checked, national police clearances, all this. In those days, we never did any of that. So anybody could have became carers and looking after children. Anybody could have put their hand up to adopt children, to become foster parents. I mean, we know from the Royal Commission, from, you know, the Child Sexual Abuse Royal Commission, that, you know, there's so much trauma that's been impacted on children that have been removed and displaced and placed in institutions and cottages right across the state and the country. And you know, it's just alarming that, you know, the more we talk about this in community, the more we educate each other, we're finding that more of our survivors are coming out of the woodwork and ready to talk about their own journeys, ready to acknowledge that they were in this mission or that mission. They grew up with these kids, or they grew up with kids and they're the only child that's still alive today because the rest of those kids have died. And they never had the opportunity to see, you know, to have reunification, to have family contact, because they were just teaching us to be white, learning us to be white and breeding the colour out of us, breeding those values, our cultural values, out of our health and well-being, things that we've been taught as children and learnt and has been part of our culture. And many of our children, sadly, were taken interstate. Many of our children were taken overseas. So this is that legacy. And I guess for us in this space at Yokai, it's about the time has come to say fair is fair. We've waited long enough. We are the wealthiest place on the bloody planet. We are the wealthiest place in this country. We had a huge surplus last year of over four billion, and 3 billion this year. I mean, what else is it going to take? Monetary compensation is a part of it, but for some people that is important because, sadly, they don't have, you know, what you and I may have today. They don't have the opportunities and the capacity to get up and talk, get up to get out and to do the normal things that everybody else is doing out there. We know that not just Aboriginal children have been impacted in this space. We know that non-Aboriginal children have been impacted too.
Yeah, and you know, the clock ticks on. So many people have already passed away. Perth and, well, Western Australia and Queensland, the only places in this country without a compensation scheme, and I would say probably two of the most racist places in this country as well. But as you say, the wealth in Western Australia, it is so mean-spirited that the trauma that has been faced by our stolen generations has been life-changing. People have grown up in foreign areas with probably siblings that they didn't know were siblings. Parents had no warning. There was no wrongdoing by parents for the children to be stolen. It's evil.
Yeah, exactly. Evil, evil practices that were supported by government.
Yeah.
Supported by people of WA during those periods. And, you know, it's an indictment. But I think it's also an important opportunity to share with the wider community now, because I think out there we have a lot of good white people, non-Indigenous brothers and sisters that are really behind us. They're supporting the work that we do, and they're wanting to elevate this level of education so that the wider community, not just in WA but Australia, will get to learn more about the impact of the removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children.
And the removal based solely on the colour of your skin. Let's pause for some music. This is Mudditch Mag, Tony Hanson and Jodie Hoffman with you. Let's have a listen to this one.
What a beautiful song there, Jode. And that's the Take No More from Emma Donovan and Kian. And that is the great song that we have that will, you know, be the end as we come to this documentary, and as our viewers come in and to see the documentary, they'll see this beautiful song being played at the end, because we show up and we're going to take no more now.
This documentary, Tony, is going to be life-changing for many people who see it. They're going to be looking at the state in a way that they've never looked at it before. They're going to learn some hard truths that they've never heard before. It's an extraordinary documentary produced by yourself and Jim and Alan as well from Bringing Them Home. Some great people and supporters behind it. But as you say, this started as a series of meetings. The purpose wasn't to do this documentary, but then you had the trust of all the people that you were speaking with, and they wanted their stories to be heard.
Yeah, yeah, and it has been, and it's taken a while to build that relationship and that trust with our survivors. And you know, today we have a really strong bond with our members, our survivors, and their families. And you know, they're really keen to come on the journey with us, and they're excited about this documentary too. And they're really ready for this to be seen. They're ready to share their stories, their personal journeys, with the wider community of WA and Australia, because the reality is there's no pride in genocide.
No. Look, it's very empowering, and the trust that is there now in the community with yourself and Jim is, well, I guess it's such an honour. I know that, you know, yourself and Jim have both been touched through the former policies of the past, but I would urge people to see this video. The content and what you'll hear is brutal, but it will change the way you perceive history, and it is the correct history that needs to be acknowledged, and our stolen generations need to be compensated. Genocide in the Wildflower State is the name of it. There is a special screening for our community next week on the 8th, 9th and 10th of April at the State Library. We do ask that if you are coming along as mob, please do RSVP so that the organisers have an idea of numbers. To the wider community, please put this date on your calendars. The 28th of April, Genocide in the Wildflower State will screen at Luna in Leederville. You really do not want to miss this. It is going to change the way that you think and look at the history of this state and this country. How can you find out more information after this program's finished? Head to the Facebook page of Yokai, or head to the Facebook page of Bringing Them Home. They will have the flyer on there. You cannot miss it. It'll have all of the information that you need, how to make your bookings, and to find out more information. And while you're there, check out all of the other great work that's being done by Bringing Them Home in Western Australia and Jim Morrison and Yokai. I don't know how that man keeps up with his many, many commitments, but he is dedicated and committed to seeking redress for our stolen generations. And there's no stopping him, as there's no stopping you either, Tony. The motivation is pretty strong, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Jode, and we're really passionate about it, and I'm grateful that as a survivor and as a young survivor that I have the capacity and the strength, the resilience to get out and talk about this and, you know, share this knowledge far and wide and continue to advocate as much as I can and keep the fire burning, which is the theme of NAIDOC this year. So it's so important for us to continue to keep the fire burning and fight the fight, because, you know, many of our people have passed away that has been impacted. You know, we're also saying to the state government, we want those that have gone before us to be compensated as well. Mm. It's something that we always encourage. We talk about, we never forget those that have gone before us. We must remember them, because they've gone before us, they've dealt with this, and their children are carrying the traumas today in our communities. And that's why we see so much trauma around us today.
Tony, thanks for the opportunity to share the studio with you for the past hour. It's a wonderful show to be involved in, and we're going to go out with another very important song.
Yeah, Joe, it's been great to be with you today. The song we're going out with is Mr. Neville by Gina Williams. See you all next week.
See you later.
On RTR FM.